listening to the Open Wheel Spectacular Podcast. Here is your host, TJ Buffenbarger.
Hello, world. On this edition of the TJ Sideways Open Wheel Spectacular Podcast, we'll break down the 2024 Chili Bowl Nationals, and we'll also look ahead a little bit to this weekend's Grand Annual Sprint Car Classic, the Knoxville Nationals of Australia, about ready to take place. And joining me in the co-host chair again, Derek Bean. Derek, how was your weekend? It was a little cold and snowy up here in the Mitten.
Yeah, it wasn't too bad of a weekend to be snowed in, though, with the Chili Bowl on all day yesterday.
Yeah, I agree. That definitely helps things considerably. It made things a lot easier to stomach. So how about we just dive right into it and get right into the open wheel, what's going on in the open wheel world?
That sounds great.
The latest dirt.
Of course, last night was the finale of the 2024 Chili Bowl Nationals, where Logan Seavey picked up his second consecutive Golden Driller, leading all 55 laps en route to the victory. You know, Richie Murray from USAC posted a very interesting statistic where Seavey, over the past like year and month, 1 month, has won two Chili Bowls, a Silver Crown title, a USAC National Midget Car Series title, Indiana Midget Week title, two USAC races on the same day at two different tracks, and completed a Four Crown National sweep. Derek, where would you rate this current run that Seavey's on compared to some of the other greats we've seen in the sport?
I mean, Kyle Larson said that it might be the best year that anyone's ever had in a midget, and he knows a thing or two about being pretty awesome in a midget and just racing in general. So I think the year definitely stacks up there. We know he has talent. It'll be interesting to see how his whole career goes and see where he rates, but definitely for 1 year, I mean, what else could he have accomplished?
Oh, yeah. I mean, in this leading into it, this kind of reminds me of when Jay Drake went on a big run in the early 2000s, and he won the Chili Bowl off the tail end of that as well. It's very similar. In fact, the only difference is Seavey's maybe has accomplished maybe even more than Drake has at this point. It's pretty amazing to watch, you know. And it's like I wrote last night in the takeaways. It's something that race fans and people in the industry really need to look away and look at, really appreciate, because, you know, these runs like this don't last forever. I mean, they may last for years, maybe a couple years. We don't really know yet how this is going to pan out. But, I mean, things change, maybe rides change and whatever else. But right now, Seavey is probably as locked in as any driver I've seen in recent years.
Yeah, and really just hope that we keep him in the dirt world, because, I mean, we've had drivers that went on runs like this in the past, and they end up in NASCAR, which is nothing wrong with that. And then all of a sudden, 20 years down the road, it's like, do you remember when he raced dirt? And so hopefully it doesn't go like that, and hopefully he stays on dirt and continues to be amazing.
Hey, look, I'm not one that's going to begrudge anyone to advance their career. So, I mean,
exactly.
if he gets an opportunity out of this, I think it's wonderful. And if not, we get to enjoy him performing at the top levels. I'd be interested to see if he gets a more serious wing sprint car look here in the next couple of years. You know, maybe someone might take a flyer on him, similar to what they did with Sunshine and some other people we've seen move up. You know, with that, those programs, the funding and everything with these two sprint car series, there might be some opportunity there for Logan.
And he definitely, you would think his skills would transition well to the wing sprint car. He's so smooth behind the wheel. So that'd be really cool to see him step up into that a little bit. But USAC stuff is really cool, so I hope he stays there as well.
Of course, yeah. And we're going to discuss more about the Chili Bowl a little bit later in the program.
Leading into the Chili Bowl Nationals, Buddy Kofoid announced he would be taking on the World of Outlaw Tour full-time in 2023 or 2024 with Roth Motorsports. TJ, did you ever think we would see Kofoid taking on the entire Outlaw Tour?
Nope. That was at least not too. If you would have asked me this 2 or 3 years ago, I would have been like, no, this isn't going to happen. After the past year and a half, yeah, it seems like a logical step for him. And I'm glad he's getting this opportunity. He's wildly talented. He's got natural ability that a lot of people on the World of Outlaw Tour would love to possess. I think the thing that Kofoid is going to be learning the most this year is getting up and down the road. I mean, it's one thing to drop in with the World of Outlaws once in a while for a show or even 10 or even 20. But when you're grinding that tour out each and every day going up and down the road, it can be something really difficult to get a grasp on as a rookie.
Yeah, I was kind of hoping last year when the 11 started off and was pretty much following the tour that maybe they would finish out the year just to see where he would stack up. Obviously, that didn't work out. So he has some experience following it. But like you said, the whole year is a totally different ball game.
Yeah, because when you're dropping in and out, you're not worried about the points race. You're not worried about a lot of other things. You're not worried about where your T-shirt trailer is going to get parked. I mean, it's just there's a lot of intricacies. Like, where are you going to sleep that night? I mean, logistics of doing the Outlaw Tour can be very difficult. And that's the part that sometimes when Outlaw Tour guys look at it, they go like, well, yeah, these guys come in and they swoop in and they can win a race or two. But I mean, to really grind it out, I personally think following that whole World of Outlaw Tour is one of the most difficult things to do in motorsports. If you had to do an over-under, Derek, how many feature wins he'd have this year in the Outlaw Tour, what would you set it at?
I mean, I would think he could win 5 to 7, maybe. I mean, I think he could have a really good year. I think the consistency will be more of the thing. The one good thing about him is he does have Roth, who's been on the tour for a long time. So I mean, I think he could have a good year without, you know, Sweet being there. And obviously Gravel and Macedo are going to win a lot. But I could see 5 races. I guess maybe that's a little pie in the sky, but you never know.
I was thinking about saying, I was thinking 5.5, 6.5, right around there. Yeah. I mean, to be honest, it's a tough deal going up right and down the road. But I think he could eke out like 5.5 for the over-under. I'd probably take, mm-hmm. and I'd probably take the over on that, to be honest. That's right where it was set at. But that seems like a good neutral number to me. In local news, Darren Nida announced on Saturday he's going to be driving for Team GGRD in 2024 in the 360 Sprint Car Division at the Knoxville Raceway, going for Rookie of the Year honors. That's going to make him teammates with Brandon Wimmer on that team, who's going to be doing a mix of 410 racing with them next season. Derek, what are your thoughts when you heard this news?
You know, so I told a couple of people that I wouldn't be surprised if he ended up with the DGRD. I did not expect it to be at Knoxville full time. I didn't expect it to be in the 360. I thought maybe he'd spot in some 360, 410 stuff in the Midwest. But yeah, that really surprised me that he's going to go full in on Knoxville with the 360. So it's going to give him some really good experience on a big track. It will be interesting to see him over there.
Yeah, I think, you know, we're competing in the Northern Ohio area weekly versus the Knoxville deal weekly is kind of a wash. He is going to get some new experiences, though. I think that's going to be a positive for him on the big track. Talking with some people, it sounds like there might be some 410 opportunities here, too. It's just not going to be full season with this, potentially. We'll have to wait and see how it plays out. But, I mean, that big track experience, he's not going to get that anywhere else. And that's really, you know, where he's going to be able to hone that. I think his short track skills are fine. It's going to be a whole new world. It's going to be a big learning experience for him. I always wonder if that team is not going to stretch itself maybe a little too thin sometimes with how many cars they try to field for people.
Right.
You know, that's one concern I would have. But, I mean, it's a decent running car. And I think the Knoxville community will embrace him. I think it'll be a really neat deal to see that. We haven't had a guy from this area attempt to go run out there every Saturday night. And the cool thing is we can all watch it on Dirt Vision, too, on every Saturday. So that would work out really well. So, I mean, kudos to them for putting that together. And later on in the program, it sounds like we will be talking to Darren about this in depth.
We already have Ohio claiming him based on Attica's social media this week. So we have Ohio claiming him. We know Knoxville loves to claim people who go run out there. So Darren's going to have the whole world after him here for a while.
Well, I mean, when you live that far in Southeast Michigan, I mean, I don't know. You could be complained by Ohio. That's a whole different planet down there compared to the rest of the state. So
exactly.
So I'm good with that. Now, if he was from like the UP or something, I'd be like, come on. Let's be real.
No, so I'm just saying he's easy to like, that's for sure. So I think he's going to have good support wherever he goes. Carson Macedo won 3 sprint car races this weekend in Australia. That gives him 4 feature wins this calendar year. TJ, do you think that makes Macedo the favorite going into this weekend's grand annual Sprint Car Classic?
No. I think, actually, he is one of the favorites. I still probably think that Jack Goodyear is probably the favorite going in just from the eye test. I mean, Goodyear had a really strong run going this past weekend, had a mechanical issue. Macedo was able to capitalize on that. But, I mean, I think personally that, you know, he's going to be one of the top guys going into this. In case you don't know, the Grand Annual Sprint Car Classic is basically Australia's version of the Knoxville Nationals. And Macedo, though, is on an incredible run down under. I mean, he's having the Australian tour that people would love to have, which is a good thing, because if between, you know, him, Brad Sweet, and Rico Abreu have done okay, but everyone else down there has really struggled this winter.
And I mean, when you think about Macedo, he's probably one of the top 3 to 5 410 wing sprint car drivers in America, which puts him right up there in the world. So he's a good driver. Obviously, that's a really good team he's with over there. So I agree with you. He's at least one of the favorites, if not the favorite, when he's over there.
And the good news is someone pointed out to me on social media last night that that event popped up on the schedule on Flow Racing for this coming week. So
that is awesome.
Get up with some like breakfast, maybe keg and eggs, depending on how you want to take your breakfast on the weekend, and watch Australia's biggest sprint car race take place. So in similar news with World of Outlaws and stuff, the World of Outlaws announced that they are going to be testing a 1-inch wicker bill on the cars during the Volusia Speed Week events, which will be interesting to see how it plays out. Derek, do you think this is going to make the racing any better?
I don't know if it's going to make the racing better. I mean, has it been better since they added the wicker bill? That's really tough to say. I do like the word testing. I like that they're trying it before they just mandate it. So that's, I think, interesting to me. But, I mean, I guess I'm waiting to see if it's going to make it any better or not.
Yeah, I mean, one thing, I never really noticed this before. I think it's maybe just we're more aware of it. But, like, someone showed me a picture from Eldora a couple years ago where not one car was in the tire tracks of another car going through the corner, because you can't follow. You get to a certain distance, like a race start, you can't follow behind anyone because of the dirty air. Has it always been there? I don't know. I mean, you know, some people say, well, with the dish wings, we didn't have this problem. But the one problem we had is when we like could fall on everyone's tire track. Sometimes I thought we ended up with more rubber down races, to be honest, because everyone's running the same line. So, I mean, I don't know if you can fall right behind someone, if it's necessarily a good thing or not. The big tracks, Volusia will definitely be a good test, you know, because the high speeds and everything else there, though. So that will wrap up the latest dirt. Before our next segment, though, we would like to thank All-Star Performance, Maxim Chassis, and Dirt Track Nation for their support of TJSideways.com and the Open Wheel Spectacular podcast. When we come back, we're going to have more on the Chili Bowl Nationals. This is the Open Wheel Spectacular. Logan Stevie, once again, as we spoke about earlier, getting his back-to-back victories in that. Of course, the big topic at the end of the week was the track preparation. Now, Derek, I thought all week the preliminaries were awesome. I thought the prep was probably the best we've seen on the prelims in a considerable amount of time. And then promptly on the 55-lapper, like everything kind of fell apart there and took a big swing and miss in that 55-lap finale.
Right. Are we at the point where 55 laps is just too much, or is it all of the racing throughout the day? I don't know. It seems like they tried everything to make that race racing. It seems to take rubber more times than not.
Yeah, I kind of look back. I think the number of cars definitely has something to do with it. I mean,
right.
I mean, there's just you know, there's always so much the dirt's going to take. And
exactly.
Just getting pounded and pounded and pounded. And eventually that's going to, you know, it's going to wear out. And one thing I did notice that a couple people point out, they didn't till up the bottom at all. And that's where it really laid down. Because, like, if you're a lap car, you're in the back of the field, that's where you're going to go. And you have right. those cars spinning and idling down there. And that, it just, it, I think it bit them on that. And because you look, the rest of the track looked okay. It just took, and once it takes rubber in one lane, it's done. I mean, right. you know, they've, you know, once in a while you'll luck out and you'll see it take rubber top to bottom, but it doesn't do that very often. And, you know, I was stunned. I mean, I know Brian Walker had tweeted at me and several teams thought about it that they were stunned. Were you surprised it took rubber last night?
It didn't seem like it was going to. The track was awesome pretty much all day long. And, I mean, they even skipped prep early in the day because it was looking so good. So, from that standpoint, yes, I was kind of surprised.
I was, but then I wrote about this later is when I thought back to it, I thought the early Alphabet Mains had some really good racing in it. And that should have been a sign because, right. you know, it should have probably been narrow, wet, and heavy if it was going to be good later in the night. Like, you look at the Knoxville Nationals, for example. If you look on Saturday night, if you're in the F main, right. you don't, you're there, but you're probably not counting on making a big run because the track's a lane and a half wide. And some of the better drivers at Tulsa, if we noticed through the heat races, one thing I noticed is when the track was narrower early in the night, that the best drivers could still make their way through. Like, the guys will find their way through there.
Right.
Yeah, but I don't know. Look, I'm not a track prep expert, but to swing a miss on the 55-lapper, I was so bummed because I thought, you know, Sunday to Friday, that was the best I've seen the track. Because even when I went, Derek, in 2001, like, the Friday night show laid an egg. The night I was there, it was Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Thursday was epic. Friday, everything was good. Then towards the tail of the night, it tailed off. Emmett came in the press room, was like, we are not having that happen on Saturday. And they tailed it up and made an awesome racetrack on Saturday. And I don't know. I just made the number of cars. The thing is, I don't know. I mean, you've talked about, you know, we've talked about off the air, like, do you need to run all 300 whatever cars? But I don't, you know, I'm not the one taking some of the pit passes, you know. I
right.
mean, it's hard to cut that revenue.
Yeah, I like that everyone runs on Saturday. I do like that tradition. I love watching it all. So to move, I mean, people talked about moving your nights. So Friday becomes like your lower mains, and then your maybe wherever you want to start, D through A is on Saturday, or I don't know. I like the feel of having all the cars run on Saturday, but sometimes it just doesn't make for the best feature at the end of the day.
It's like I wrote this in the takeaways. They've become a victim of their own success, and it's really tough. I feel for them because there's not an easy solution to this at all. And but hopefully next year, I think they've got the preliminaries figured out. We just got to figure out something to make that 55 lap finale hit, you know, at the end of the night. So. But Dazen Persley, to me, is a guy that stood out. You know, Derek, you called it. We were talking during the broadcast. I got to give you credit. You kind of called out that one like he was going to make a run. Man, did he make you look good.
Yeah. I mean, he did it in the D main. Well, D main, he only had to go, I think, fourth to first. But he did it in the C. He did it in the B. And it just looked like everything was just locked in for him. So I thought we were going to see him move up. Obviously he did move up. A lot of people think he could have won if it didn't take rubber. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh yeah, I think he ends up the podium at least for sure, right. You know, higher up maybe. I mean he probably a second maybe. I think he definitely could have been a shot to win it. I mean, it's I felt for him more than anybody when that thing locked down, because I was kind of watching the transponders. I'm like, man, he's making progress, he's coming, and then boom, you know, track locks down, and that's start the bus at that point. So, but right. What impressive, you know, you think about where he was at even just a couple years ago. You know, we were giving him a standing ovation for just being able to walk into the expo center after right. a terrible accident in Arizona, and now he's contending for Chili Bowl championships. It would have been a fairy tale story if he could have won, but it still is, even though he, you know, getting a top five at the Chili Bowl, you know, just a couple years later is absolutely amazing.
I counted up. He passed 45 cars in the from the D main onto the A main, so that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, that was, but, bodes well for him going into the 2024 season for sure. Now,
I do agree with you, though. It's hard to say that he would win it because, I mean, CV was awesome Friday night. He was awesome Saturday night. So, but I think he could have got up there and contended with Buddy and potentially Logan.
Of course, the wildest topic from Saturday was the Ken and McIntosh slide job on Thomas Meserol. Why both guys were in transfer spots. Meserol gets upside down. McIntosh goes on to make the main. And, Derek, that was, man, it was the hot topic. It took me probably a good 5 minutes sitting there just to, like, contemplate what we had just witnessed there.
Right. And you got to believe that Cannon did not know they were both in the transfer. That never happens, you would think.
Yeah, he even said so in the interview. Like, did you notice? Yeah. I don't know if you were watching at that point, but when the interview happened, like, his demeanor completely changed when Earl Hoon told him he was in a transfer spot. And he's like, oh, well, that doesn't look very good. It's like, nope. And I mean, look, you know, I know Meserol is the slide or die guy, right? And, but I still have a hard time with that. I mean, I'm probably a little older school than a lot of newer people that find that acceptable in our sport. I don't know. That, to me, it's one thing if it's close or it's hard racing, but I mean, there was no chance that was going to land. I mean, in my mind.
And the thing that I think makes it stick out even more is that we didn't have a lot of that all week, all weekend, really. So it's like, you know, people give midget racing a bad name and say that they weren't running into each other all the time on tight quarters. So I guess that makes it even worse, where it was kind of like the spotlight because it was really the only time that it really happened.
And I'll even go as far as, even on the USAC tour, I thought we saw a lot less of it all last season, really. I mean, compared to the past couple of years. And then you had the people coming out going, well, it's midget racing, midget racing, and all this other stuff. I mean, that annoyed me a little bit because I thought they, like you said, the whole week I thought we saw pretty respectable racing. I mean, sure, there were moments. And Grant, we're watching at home, so we're not watching the back of the field necessarily when they're on it. There might be, you know, who knows what was going on sometimes back there. But for the most part, I thought, like you, it was a really clean week. And that was just, I don't know, that was, I had a hard time with that one. That was like one of those audible, like, oh my. Like, there were two audible moments watching by myself in my kitchen, and that was one of them. So, yeah.
And the other thing is, I know that Team Ez and Cannon have had run-ins in the past.
Yes,
so,
they have.
Who knows if it was someone else, maybe Cannon doesn't go in there like that. I mean,
I
don't know.
That's hard to tell. That's always something they can answer. And but that, I think that's one we're going to be talking about going into next year's Chili Bowl too. So we'll have to see.
Well, team has handled it way better than probably anyone in the building would have. That's for sure.
Yeah, could you imagine if that would have been Shane Cottle? Something else. I mean, it would. Well, first of all, I don't think it would do that to Shane. But I don't know. It's hard to tell. So, the other one was that's been debated even into this morning was Buddy Kofoid getting by Stevie for the lead, but then the caution coming out and Kofoid being set back to second. Now, I've sat in many a scoring tower, Derek. And I've actually helped score at times. Been a while, but I have. And, like, the way I am always going to be on the side of split scoring, where, it, you know, like, for instance, when the World of Outlaws split score, it's the leader plus one car past the line, the lap counts. At Knoxville Raceway, it's just the leader getting by, and it counts. I've always been on the side. I've never liked the rule where it's like half the field, the top five, or the whole field passing the start-finish line to count a lap.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you, but unfortunately, I guess the rule is there that the whole field has to be by, right?
Yeah, and I will admit, if you're going to be consistent about that, as long as you're consistent about it, you know the rule's going in, or at least you should.
Right.
But man, in 20, 2024 with all the transponders and backup scoring that we have, serial scoring and everything else, I have a hard time with this because, I mean, for one thing, it's less wear and tear on the racetrack. It's less wear and tear on the equipment. You're more outdoors, you're most likely to see a fuel stop when you have split scoring, when you're counting the lap. I mean, I don't know. To me, if you cross the line, you should have the spot. I mean, exactly. I'm just, you know, in this day and age, I think this is one thing they've got to really look at the Chili Bowl. Because, I mean, think about how many laps throughout the whole week we've wasted going back to the previous lap because the whole field didn't get by.
Yeah. And like I said, it does. It's not great for Buddy, obviously, because he makes the pass. And like I said, most tracks, you probably have a chance to still have the lead after the caution. So,